Some people play the game while others change the game. Welcome to Game Changer Talks, featuring high-level people giving high-level talks to help you elevate your business to the next level. Introducing your host, Jimmy Harding.
Hi, my name is Jimmy Harding, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Game Changer Talks, where we bring you high-level people to share with you high-level strategies that have helped them take their business and life to the next level. Today, I'm really excited, honored, and privileged to have with us Miss Sandra Joseph. She's a speaker, author, singer, and actor. And, you know, I'm just so excited to have Sandra with us today. She's the co-author of Your Creative Soul, Expressing Your Authentic Voice. She does keynotes, concerts, workshops, client appreciation parties for corporate events. But what's most fascinating to me, and we're going to get into, is for nearly a decade, she played one of the best known roles in Broadway as the lead in Phantom of the Opera. So there are a couple of key distinctions here, you know, getting that role and then staying in it for nearly a decade and then transitioning to what she's doing now. So Sandra's going to be able to share some incredible insights with us today. And I'm very excited to have you here. Thank you for agreeing to come on and be interviewed. And I'm going to turn it over to you to just tell us a little bit about you and how you got started and your journey to Phantom of the Opera.
Hey, Jimmy. Thank you so much. It's really an honor to be here with you. I'm so happy that we met. What was it, about a year ago now, I guess?
In yes. New York City
at a live event. And thanks for this invitation. I'm really excited to speak to you and your audience. You know, I never realized until I transitioned out of the theater world and into the business world how many parallels there are to my journey to Broadway and any entrepreneur or business person's journey to sort of making their dream come true, wow. What they want to do in their world of business. Yeah, so many of the same principles. I mean, I grew up in Detroit, born to a family with really good hearts and not so good with money. And I was in Detroit sharing not only a bedroom with my sister, but a bed until I was in the fifth grade. So I came from very humble beginnings, and I didn't really ever dream that my life would turn into what it has. Fortunately, my parents had opportunities to take us to see shows, to see theater when I was a kid. I had a cousin who worked for a radio station. He got a lot of free tickets. So when I was about 8 years old, we went to see Annie, the musical Annie, and I just fell in love. I knew from that moment that whatever that little girl in the red dress was doing up there, I wanted to do that. It was like being struck by lightning. It was so visceral for me. But immediately on the heels of that came the fear of how on earth does one start doing that? And you have to have, first of all, some natural ability that I didn't know whether or not I had. And then you have to have the courage to get out there in front of people. And I was a shy, insecure kid, not at all the kind of kid who would naturally want to jump into the spotlight. I didn't want any part of that. So, but here's the thing, Jimmy, that I will confess to you and your listeners, is that somewhere inside of me, I believed that kind of thing was possible. I don't know where that comes from or why I had such a crazy sort of inner belief system, but something in a quiet corner of my mind or heart kind of believed that I could. I thought I might be able to sing if I worked really hard. I thought I might be able to overcome my fear of being in front of people if I worked at it really, really hard. So I imagine for every person listening, we all have something inside of us that is sort of maybe a hidden potential or some little quiet voice inside that knows there's something out there for us to do. and it feels scary. It feels maybe too big for you. But I think that really every success that I've had in my career came as a result of listening to that little quiet voice inside rather than the much louder voice of fear and all of the external reasons why this was an outrageous dream for a kid like me.
Wow. So, you know, that's a great distinction because we all have that inner quiet voice and the fear voices and everything else are much louder. So what specifically do you think you did that made you follow that small voice, that intuition? What is the distinction for you that made the difference?
The real turning point for me has always been taking a small risk, taking a little baby step toward that thing that I know inside that I want. So the tiny risk, the first one was I auditioned for about a year after I saw Annie when I was in, I think it was fifth grade. I auditioned for a little solo in my school Christmas concert and I got the part. You know, this it was like 10 seconds of a song, not even a whole song. But the night of the big concert, I was standing outside of the gym. You know, they turn the gym into a theater when you're in elementary school. And I took a peek inside the door of the gym, and I saw the crowd. And we were lined up outside, about to walk in and begin this concert. And I ran up to my fifth grade music teacher, Mrs. Maters, and I said, I can't do it. I mean, I was almost in tears. I was so panicked at the thought of having to step out there by myself in front of all those people. I could cry now thinking about it. It was so overwhelming. So I actually, that was a failure of courage in that moment. I actually asked her to get someone else. And I still remember standing on those risers during the concert. And when the moment that was supposed to be my solo arrived, another kid from my class walked forward, and a little boy in my class, and he sang the solo. And, you know, he didn't pass out or die, or no one threw tomatoes at him.
Yeah.
And I stood there thinking, you know, in the moment of fear, all I could envision was, what if I fail? What if everyone hates me? What if I make a fool of myself? But in the moment when I watched this other kid find his courage and share his voice, all I could think was, what if I had succeeded? What if I had gone for it? And I felt such shame and regret and embarrassment that I had let myself down in that moment, that moment guided my steps from then on. I made a decision, even as a kid, on a subconscious level, really. But I decided never again am I going to let fear stop me in my tracks. No matter what it takes, I'm going to draw on the inner resources I have and all the faith I can muster and walk through that door toward courage and not let fear be a roadblock for me anymore. Because you think you're going to escape something, some negative, but ultimately, you see, if by failing yourself, you feel the same feeling of regret and disappointment and shame that you were trying to avoid by staying hidden and quiet, by not taking a risk. So to me, all those little baby steps, and people listening can probably think of what that baby step is for them right now, today, that once they're done listening to this interview, they can take that one little baby step, whatever it is. So I did not go from chickening out of my first solo straight to Broadway, of course. There were many baby steps in between. I started doing shows in high school and then in college, you know, from small roles to working my way up to doing bigger roles. And it was scary every time. I was afraid every time. And I did not major in theater when I went to college because I was afraid that, you know, that made no sense. I needed to have something that was a real degree to fall back on. So I got a degree in communication. But eventually, you know, again, the big decision point came when I graduated from college with this communications degree, I did not have any desire to go and get a job in that field. So I sat down with my parents, and my dad said, you know, this performing bug is not going to go away. Why don't you go for it? Move to New York and give yourself a time limit. Give it 5 years and see what happens. And give it your best shot. And if it doesn't work out, you can always come back home and figure out plan B. So that was the big risk after all the baby steps.
Yeah.
Moving to New York felt like a very big one.
Well, you know what I really like about that is it's a lot of brilliance in what your dad had to say, because it's not like, well, you can do this or this. It's like, go all out after this. And then if that doesn't happen, you can figure out plan B. So you didn't have your fallback made. It was like you were going all out for that, you know, for that first thing that you wanted to achieve. And that's just brilliant. And I think where many people fall short, because they have this thing, I can do this, and if that don't work out, I'll do this. They already have plan B sketched out.
Right. I had no idea what plan B would look like. None whatsoever. But I didn't want to even go there. I mean, I did have the degree, but I did give myself 100% wholeheartedly to the pursuit of what I really wanted to do with my life. And my dad, really, he was such a present, loving father. Work was not his thing. He hated his work. And he wanted for his children, more than anything, for them to love what they did for a living. So I think that's part of the reason that he knew, you know what, even if I don't make it, even if I end up waiting tables for the rest of my life and the performing thing doesn't happen, at least I will have tried. I will have given my heart to this passion of mine. And what more can you ask for in life than an opportunity to pursue something that you know in your heart is what you love?
Right. Absolutely. So, okay, you have your plan. You go to New York City. How do you execute this plan? So, you know, I mean, do you go start meeting people, go straight to Phantom of the Opera, or are there some baby steps on plan A as well?
Yes. The first thing was training. I found, and I know this is true of business people too. You can find a coach, you can find a mentor, you can find a class to take, a conference, a seminar. I signed up for every class I could possibly get my hands on. I worked every temp job that they call temp jobs, you know, every survival job that I could get. I never could even get hired to wait tables, because in New York, the competition for that is so fierce. There's so many out of work actors trying to, you know, wait.
Yeah.
Without real restaurant experience, I couldn't even get hired. So I worked at answering phones at a social work office. I worked in the mailroom at the Bank of Tokyo. And in the meantime, when I wasn't trying to pay the rent, I went to best coaches I could find. I think that's another key point, that even when I couldn't afford it and it didn't make any sense really on paper, I do a lot of client appreciation events for financial advisors, and I always sort of cringe when I tell them this part, and I don't recommend this to anyone else, but I took cash advances from my credit card to pay for coaches that I knew could help me. When I would go to a class and I would see someone else get up there and sing and act at a level that I knew I wasn't at yet, I would approach that person after class and ask them who they study with. And people were very generous to me and gave the name of their coach, their vocal coach, their singing teacher, their acting teacher. And then I would go and find those people and prepare. There's a lot of preparation work. And you know, we all know we need to be disciplined about studying and working hard to hone our craft and get better at what we do. But when you love what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work. I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yes, absolutely.
Those days where you're working 12 hours, but the day flew by because you were so in it.
Yeah.
It felt like that. But what didn't feel so good is when I would go to auditions and get rejected and rejected and rejected. And in those early days, when you first move to New York and you don't have an agent, you are completely, it really is like an entrepreneur's journey. No one's going to make you do the work but you. And if you don't get your butt out of bed and go stand in the long line that goes down the block, I mean, there were times I would be up at 4 a.m, warming up my voice, stretching my body, doing all these exercises, singing my song, practicing. And then I would go stand in the line by 6 or 7 a.m. And I wouldn't get seen until 1 or 2 p.m. And when I was in the room for the audition, they would give you 16 bars to sing, which is a snippet of a song. And after that, you know, you're in the room for a minute and then you're out. So all those hours of preparation for that one opportunity, and then you hear, thank you, next.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was tough. So 4.5 years into my 5-year plan, of course, I was out of money, ran out of money constantly. I literally was sleeping on a friend's sofa bed because I couldn't afford a place of my own. Every day I would eat a bagel in the morning and a slice of pizza at night because that was all I could afford. And it really was looking like this is not meant to be, you know, that it was 4.5 years, crunch time, you know.
Right.
My bags were almost packed and ready to move back to Michigan. And that's when I had the opportunity to audition for The Phantom of the Opera.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. You know, when you got that news and being 4.5 years into this 5-year journey, you know, how did you feel about that? What was the excitement level and the different things like that? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, after 4.5 years of rejection, when you finally get this opportunity to do this, you must have those voices in your head that, oh, this is going to be the same rejection or something. But I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but tell us about it.
Sure. Well, I had, in those 4.5 years, I had gotten some little bites, little things here and there. I was singing and dancing on a cruise ship. I'd done some regional theater jobs, but nothing in New York, nothing anywhere near Broadway. But I had some really high-level coaches at that point. And my coaches and teachers had been telling me for years that Christine was a really good fit for me, that I was really right for this character. You have to be the right physical type. You kind of have to look the part. You have to have the right type of voice, the right sound quality. And there was just something about her. You know, Christine, when she starts out, she's a dancer in the chorus with a big dream of being a singer. So I really related to this character. And to talk about putting all of my eggs in one basket. I mean, I put so much pressure on this audition that, of course, I thought, this is it. I have got to get this one or it's over. So I practiced every single syllable of the song. I worked every single word of the script. You know, I was so ready. So I get there to the audition, and here's little me from Detroit, you know, shy kid who chickens out of her first solo. I walk onto the big Broadway stage for the first time, and there's that famous chandelier. You know, anyone who's seen the show, you know that Phantom of the Opera chandelier, and I'm standing on a Broadway stage. I burst into tears the minute I stood backstage. I just couldn't even believe where I was. I would have paid them to just let me go walk on the stage, you know? And suddenly here I am about to sing for Hal Prince, the director, who's like the Steven Spielberg of Broadway. And he's right there in front of me. So all of my preparation, all of my training kind of went out the window, Jimmy. Because, you know, when we try too hard, we get in our own way. And I had put way too much pressure on this thing. And I know I've talked to enough salespeople to know that trying to close a deal sometimes, you your nerves get the best of you. And you, what I did in my first audition was basically the song came out of my mouth, but I was completely disembodied. It was like I was a singing head with no body. I was frozen and I wasn't connecting with the song, with the audience, with the moment. You know, I wasn't really there. So because I was the right type and I had the right type of voice and all of that, I did get a part in the show, but not on Broadway and not the starring role. I got cast in the chorus on Phantom's national tour. So that was still thrilling. I was no longer in the mailroom at the Bank of Tokyo. You know, it was a thrill to be a part of that show. And I got the opportunity to understudy Christine. So again, it was like another, I won't call it a baby step. It was a big step.
Yeah.
It was a grown-up step. But it was on the journey. It was another step on the path toward the leading role. So a year after, I'm in the chorus for an entire year. And then our Christine gets another show, so she's leaving. So they flew me back to New York to audition a second time. So now what am I going to do this time, right? There's no way I'm going to be frozen. I decided, okay, this is it. Now I'm going to nail it. I'm going to be in my body. I'm going to sing this song. So once again, when we put too much pressure on something, we can get in our own way in the opposite direction. So the second audition, rather than just being simple and honest, I did too much. I moved around the stage with big arms and big steps, and it was fake. It wasn't, again, it wasn't just coming from my heart, from a real place. So I blew it a second time.
Oh, man.
I was so angry at myself and so devastated. So my agent said, of course, you know, they're going to move on. That's it. And boy, talk about beating yourself up. I mean, I really was devastated after that second audition because I thought, it's never going to happen now. Now I have hit the glass ceiling in this company, and it's my own fault because I just showed them that I'm not capable of it twice. So I went back to the chorus and really felt like a failure at that point. And my dad, God bless him, he kind of talked me down from that and said, you know, you need to shift your perspective on this. You are a working actress doing a job that people would give their right arm for. You get to sing and dance and act for a living. Maybe you're not at the top level, but you're still doing pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes we fail to see how far we've come. And you can keep getting stuck on you climb to one level on the ladder and you only look at the next rung. You don't see how far you've come on the journey. So that was a big lesson for me. I had to really shift it in my mind and realize wherever I go from this point, this is already a success. You know, I'm doing pretty good here, and I'm so thankful. I'm so lucky. You know, I've been so blessed. So I literally wrote a bunch of thank yous in my journal that night. I filled pages and pages of all of the things that I had to be grateful for. And I wrote a thank you letter to the stage manager who had really helped me prepare for the audition. And I said to her, even if this is as far as I ever get, I have already seen enough dreams come true to last a lifetime. And because she had worked really hard with me and she was gunning for me, you know, and so I just wanted to really thank all the teachers and coaches that got me that far and let everybody know it's okay. This is still pretty good where I am. So don't you know, Jimmy, as soon as I gave the stage manager that note and wrote all of those gratitudes and shifted my energy around it, the next day my agent called and said they still haven't found anybody to play Christine and they want to bring you in and give you one last chance.
Wow. Amazing what energy does, right?
True. I really believe it. I've seen it time and time again. So the third audition.
Oh, no.
Good time's a charm. So the third audition, you know, of course, I was still nervous. But I had surrendered it at that point because I, you know, I really was okay with where I had landed in life. I didn't walk in there with that kind of clinging energy. So I was able that time, of course, I was still nervous and afraid, but I was able to put it in a proper perspective and say, you know what, I'm going to just show up and bring my heart and be present in the moment, try to have a good time, and whatever happens, happens. And that's when I got the job.
Awesome. That is awesome. So what did you do when you found out you were cast? Like, did you call your dad immediately, jump up and down? I mean, what happens?
I remember laughing and crying at the same time.
Awesome.
And when I called my dad, he was in his car. I know we're not supposed to talk on cell phones and drive. This is a long time ago, but he was in his car. He literally started honking the horn and rolling down his windows and yelling to strangers, "My daughter just got the lead in the Phantom of the Opera."
I love it. I love it. That is so awesome. Wow, what an incredible journey to get to that spot.
Thanks.
That is awesome.
A lot of lessons learned.
Oh, yeah. Man. I hate to move on. I'm just celebrating in the moment with you. I mean, what an incredible journey, you know? And I guess, so the thing that is so incredible about your journey to me is, like, from that moment, once you got that part, you were cast. So, you know, obviously I never knew all of the details leading up to that part, but, you know, that was an incredible thing in and of itself. But then, you know, what did you do to stay on your game for almost 10 years? Because, you know, other people want to be Christine. And, you know, how do you perform at such a high level that, you know, you stay in that part?
Yeah, the thrill was incredible, of course, of just the privilege of being able to play that role. So the first year, I didn't even take a vacation. I mean, I performed 6 nights a week, but I would have done 7 if they had let me. I was just so fulfilled by it, so happy to be a part of it. But then, you know, come year 7, year 8, you start to get a little tired, of course. There were different steps along the journey, even from that point. When I first got the leading role, it was on the national tour. So I played all over the country. Well, and then after 2 years of that, they moved me to Broadway. So when you're on tour, you have these little breaks in between cities. But in New York, it's like a recurring dream. It's just over and over and over, 6 nights a week, 2 weeks off per year. That's it. So, you know, there are many, many tricks that actors rely on to convince themselves that it's all happening for the first time, because that's our job. We have to convince the audience that this is all happening for the very first time. But I'll tell you one little story about at a point when I was really feeling the strain of having to bring it every night. I shared that with another actor friend of mine, and I said, you know, I am just so worn out. I don't know if I can keep doing this at this level. And he said, let's meet for coffee next week. So we sat down across from each other a week later in this cute little coffee shop in New York. And he handed me a gift that is one of the most amazing, thoughtful gifts I have ever received in my life. It was a purple box, and he had stenciled the word perspective across the top of the box. And I opened the box, and inside were little snippets that he had scoured the internet to find from young women who had seen Phantom of the Opera. And many of them mentioned me by name. And each person was talking about how the show had touched her, how she had been moved by it or inspired by my performance, or maybe had a dream of her own, but similar to what I had when I was a kid and saw Annie. Some little seed was planted in somebody. And I kept that box in my dressing room, and I would read one of those little snippets before I went out on stage. And just rather than think about, you know, 1,500 people out there, I would think of that one girl or that one family who had saved up their money to come. And maybe it's my 927th show, but it's the one chance for this person to see that show. And what do I want to give in that moment? And it, you know, shifting again my perspective on it to not making it about me, but making it about them and what I really care about. You know, we all want to serve people with what we do. That's what we're doing it for. Yes, you know, we want to make a living, we want to pay our bills and all of those things, but what really makes it worthwhile at the end of the day is, what's my legacy here? How am I impacting other people, the people I care about and the people I'm here to serve in the world? So I think you have to stay connected to the reason why you're doing it. So that really helped me over the long term, was to stay connected to what other people were getting from that evening in the theater.
Yeah. You know, that's really brilliant. And I also want to mention that there's a strong parallel in that strategy that you used, as well as in business and in marketing, because, you know, in business, we want everything to be client-centric. It's all about the end user. It's not about the company. And, you know, many times in marketing campaigns, our most successful marketing campaigns are when, although the campaign is going out to the masses, we're actually speaking to one. So we take one person that we've helped and inspired or whatever, and the whole campaign, the copy, the video scripts and everything are geared at focusing on that one person.
Wow. I love that. Yes. Rule one of the theater, know your audience and connect with them. And also, as I'm sure in marketing, the things I was talking about in my journey to Broadway, in being present, being from your heart. I mean, if I'm not connecting with people at an emotional level, from the heart level, then I'm not doing my job. And I know I've learned this from my time working with business people and doing these client appreciation events, like with financial advisors. I attend sometimes their boot camps and conferences. And I hear these principles being taught that are so applicable from my world, from the theater, that business people have to learn how to connect from their heart and reach their customers and clients and their audience and touch them at an emotional level. Even financial advisors are being taught, don't go in there and talk about numbers. Don't tell them how much money they're going to make. Talk about, you know, what their goals for the future and what their dreams are and the dreams of their family and how you can help them achieve those dreams. So it is fascinating to me to learn all of the parallels.
Absolutely. And, you know, you are, you know, and I mean, you have made that transition yourself. So, like, tell us, how do you, you know, how did you come from transitioning out of theater to writing the book to, you know, becoming a speaker and doing everything that you're doing? And now you have some DVDs where, you know, and workbooks that go along with the books. I mean, you're doing some incredible entrepreneurial things now, still inspiring and helping others. So how did you first make the transition, and second, how did you know exactly what you wanted to do when you made the transition?
Thank you for asking that. I love that question, because I'm still sort of in the midst of this wonderful new discovery. It's like life has come full circle, and now I'm riding the circle again, because it's a very similar story, actually. In my latter years in Phantom, it was 2004. I knew that I was being pulled towards something else. And it was a real crisis, because theater and singing, acting, you know, being a part of Broadway was what I had trained for my whole life. But I'm sure other people have experienced this too, where you even though you've worked so hard and you reach a certain level, sometimes you feel complete with it, or you just feel like your energy is pulling you in a different direction. Well, I had no idea what I would do next, but I knew very clearly that Broadway wasn't it for me anymore, that I wanted to do something completely different. And I started dabbling. I looked into real estate. A lot of actors transition, they'll do real estate. I'll learn about that. I love fashion. I thought, well, maybe I'll open a little clothing store. Thank God I didn't do that. I don't know the first thing about that kind of a business. So then I went to a conference. Again, so many things happen when you just put yourself in the right situation to learn. So I went to this conference, which was not about shifting careers per se. It was called Living a Fearless Life weekend conference. It was taking place in New York City. And I heard a speaker, a spiritual author, teacher named Carolyn Mace. It's spelled like Caroline Miss, M-Y-S-S. And I knew who she was. I had read her books and I heard her speak. And I don't know what happened during that presentation, but she talked about getting a download. When you get a download and then you know exactly. And I was like, where's my download? I have been praying and meditating and journaling, asking for guidance on what I'm supposed to do next, and nothing is coming. But I tell you the truth, this is, I swear to you, the minute my head hit the pillow that night, download. I saw it, I felt it, I heard it, and what it was didn't really make sense to me. I thought maybe it would be a volunteer thing that I would do. I did not know it would become my career. But I saw myself standing on stage, speaking and singing, but not in character, not wearing a costume and a wig, just being me up there sharing what I've learned and hopefully inspiring people and helping them go after their dreams and talking about fear and confessing my own fears. And it was like the script was being written in my head and I could see it. I could just see it. So again, it took many baby steps and moving through many, many fears to make that happen. I didn't know there was such a thing as a speaker, that one could be that, you know, as a career, you could be and a speaker singer. And that really didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So again, I started I looked for coaches and teachers and thought, well, who's doing this and who's doing it in a way that I find really resonates with me and that seems really authentic. And so I started looking around and going to conferences and speaker trainings, and I started meeting people, and one thing led to another. And then, so then get this, this is how the universe works. And it freaks me out every time. So I'm invited to sing for a conference in Colorado 2 years ago. And I find out when I get there that I am going to speak right before Carolyn Mace speaks. I'm going to sing before she does her keynote speech. So they called me. I was really intimidated by her because she's such a rock star and I so admire her work. So I was kind of hiding and I was just going to sing my song and then go sit down in the back of the audience, you know, like I do. Well, they called me to the green room right before, and they said, Carolyn wants to meet you. And I thought, oh no, because she's kind of a tough love kind of character. And she calls it like she sees it. And she's an intuitive, and they say she sees your shadow. And I thought, she is going to take one look at my fearful ego and call me out. So I go backstage, and there's Carolyn Mace. And she says, you were Christine? Phantom of the Opera is my favorite show. So, of course, she said, I saw you in New York. And I said, well, I saw you in New York. And it kind of changed my life. And so I was able to share with her that whole story. And one thing led to another. And she ended up inviting me to create a CD teaching series with her. And that's what you mentioned earlier, that we have a 4-CD audio learning program in which we both speak, and I also sing 5 songs, and it's called Your Creative Soul, Expressing Your Authentic Voice. So talk about a full circle moment from seeing her speak. That's when that seed was planted for me. And then 10 years later, I got to work with her. So it's just been a dream of a journey. And I think those kinds of things happen. Magic happens when you keep listening to that inner voice and moving, finding your courage and walking through your fears. I really believe the universe conspires to set you on that path so that you can be of service in the way you're meant to be.
Absolutely. It's been my own journey. And you know, since I've experienced it just as you have, I tell people that I work with, I'm like, you know, it's okay to reinvent yourself. And it doesn't matter if it's every 6 months, every year, it's just when it's time, it's time. So, you know, if you're this today and all of a sudden you have a calling to do more, then it's absolutely okay to change and say, oh, and not beat yourself up. Like you mentioned with the rung of the ladder that, oh, I could have spent all this time doing it had I known what I wanted. Well, you know, sometimes we're not given the gift until we actually put ourselves in the place to use it.
Absolutely. I think that is so true. And you have to be willing to step out of your comfort zone and take a risk in a new direction. And in many ways for me, this transition has been starting all over. You know, yes, of course, I'm drawing on skills that I've honed from being on stage for so many years. But I know so many people who are theater people who would never step out without a character and a script to hide behind. That, you know, it's scary. And I have had to really learn from the beginning. It's like putting myself through grad school at this point. But it's also really exciting and thrilling. And I think for everyone listening, when you do decide to move in a different direction, you have to allow yourself to be a beginner. You're not going to be a master at it right off the bat. You've got to learn and grow. And even in this, it's funny how life sometimes keeps teaching those of us who are stubborn like me to the same lessons over and over again. When I started out speaking, I kind of did the same thing that I did with those auditions for Phantom, where it was challenging at first to get out there as myself. So I tried to follow a script. I was too stiff at first. Then I was too big. And, you know, I was looking at what everyone else was doing and trying to sort of do it their way. And I had to find my own way. I had to find my voice and what's authentic for me as a speaker and singer. So yeah, I do think when we take those risks, it does pay off eventually. Sometimes it takes longer than we had hoped. Like I said, it was 2004 when I first had that vision. I didn't even leave Phantom until 2006. And then speaking and getting published and all of those things took years. It took way longer than I ever anticipated.
Yeah. And I mean, things just take different times, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that parallels back to you is like, you didn't let anything stop you. You had this dream and this vision. And, you know, just like your 5-year plan there, you knew your vision and this is what you were going to do. And you just didn't let anything stop you. And, you know, the thing, something that you and I have in common is like not long ago, 5 years ago, I transitioned out of, you know, being the business owner of a construction company for 25 years into marketing and consulting. So, you know, one of the things that I did is even when it didn't make sense on paper, I got the very best to show me the way. So coaches and mentors have been huge in my journey. And I mean, it's been able to let me leapfrog, you know, so many years of trial and error. and get me down to the specifics of, you know, what I needed to do to actually serve my audience.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure there were times when it wasn't easy and things didn't go according to plan. And you have to move through those and keep the faith and keep plugging away and following what's in your gut. And did you follow your intuition? Was it your heart? How did you feel when you were feeling pulled toward this transition?
Yeah, it's funny that you asked that question, because not many people question. I was like, I was at a bottom. I knew I needed to do something different. I went through a bunch of challenges, and I literally went to a Tony Robbins event. First, I went to UPW, then I went to Date with Destiny, and I literally drew this future that I was going to be doing that I knew nothing about on a poster board. And like, it was probably 3 years later, I was in New York City hosting my mastermind. And I'm like, you know, I said, wow, this is what I drew out on that poster board. I'm doing exactly what I created this vision for myself.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's incredible. It's incredible. It started by attending that event. And I think that's huge. So many of the great things that have come in my life have been because I stepped out of my environment. I think it's important to get away from home, to go to events like that where you are immersed in, you know, we get so busy in life. There's so many things calling for our attention that before you know it, a lifetime has gone by. If you don't create the time to get a weekend away to focus on your hopes and dreams and goals for yourself, then you're not going to live, I think, a strategic life that's aligned with who you're here to really become.
Yeah.
I think getting away from your routine and attending inspirational events like that, training events, conferences, it's those are pivotal moments for so many people that I talked to. It was for you. It was for me.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, another thing, it's funny how, you know, the vision and focusing on, you know, your goals and who you want to become and everything. It's, you know, one of the things that I say all the time, because, you know, one of the things that I do is I help people grow their businesses. And I say, you know, well, the first thing we have to do is grow you, because you're not capable of growing a business until you make yourself ready to grow that business. So like, I can only expand my business, you know, as much as I expand myself. So personal growth is so much related to business growth that they're, you know, they go one in one. So the first thing we have to do is dive into that.
Oh, I love that, Jimmy. That is so key. It's so true. Your business is, I think, a reflection of your own inner capacities. And often I think, thank God I wasn't more successful at an earlier age, because I didn't have the stuff to handle it within me. I do think you have to continually grow yourself and get support on a personal level and grow the qualities and capacities within yourself, so that when things happen outside of you, you have the inner strength to handle it and to keep going. It's not just a journey of career. It is absolutely a journey of self and soul and spirit.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Any words of wisdom that you'd like to leave for the audience?
The thing that I'm thinking of right now is, you know, as we've been talking, is going through all of those rejections back in the early days when I was starting out. And even after I made this career transition as a speaker, I was turned down by so many publishers. There are going to be setbacks, quote unquote, failures, rejections, things that seem to not go your way. And if I can give one thing to people listening, it would be the tolerance for that, the patience, the inner resolve, and the resilience to keep going through those challenges. And don't let that knock you off course, and don't let that knock you down. And, you know, actors face probably more rejection in a lifetime than maybe anybody else, because we're constantly putting ourselves out there, going to auditions, working really hard and getting no thank you. It can take 100 no's before you get one yes. But that one yes can change your life forever. You know, I don't think I mentioned during our conversation, Jimmy, that not only did being a part of Phantom change my financial life and my career, I also fell in love with the guy behind the mask, and he's my husband of 12 years now. So one big yes might be right around the corner for people listening. You, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not right there waiting for you. And that one big yes can set you on a path that will change your life in every wonderful way. So, awesome. Yeah. So I hope that
I know
the faith.
You know, I wanted to mention about your husband at one point, and I'm so glad you did. But it, you know, your story just kept going and getting deeper, and then I just forgot. But if our audience wants to learn more about you or get your CD set or get you to speak at an event or something, how can they get in touch with you? You have a website or some different information that you could share with us? And I'll be sure and put this in the show notes so everyone will have links to click to it and make it easy. But, you know, I mean, you're so great at what you do and just, you know, so inspirational and everything. I think everyone would be really well served to, you know, find out more about you.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yes, I do have a website. People can find me at sandrajoseph.com. It's sandrajoseph.com. Or they can find me on Facebook, Twitter, or send me an email, sandra@sandrajoseph.com. I would love to hear from anyone who was listening today.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I mean, I really appreciate it. And, you know, this has by far been, all of the interviews have been great. This one kind of went, you know, they had a lot of personal stuff in here, like, you know, a much more deeper than business only talk. And it's really been one of my favorite interviews so far. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. God help me if I tried to do the straight business talk. It's the fraud all over me. I don't know that world so well, but I'm learning more and more every day. And it's fascinating. And I just love what you do. I think you're a master at what you do. And oh my gosh, I don't know the first thing about marketing. We should talk. And but I really just appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and your audience. I'm so happy that we met.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much. And everyone, be sure to check out the show notes, and it'll have Sandra's link in there and a full transcript of today's episode. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Now that you've filled your mind with just what you need to accelerate your business, it's time to keep moving. Visit GameChangerTalks.com/elevate and get instant access to 8 training videos to help you elevate your business to the next level. This incredible video series is free, and it's just what you need to become a game changer. So check it out now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Game Changer Talks.